Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy? My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alta Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Cordella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, super foods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times. However, this is the last live broadcast we'll be doing this year. We're taking a couple of weeks off, and we will be back with you on the first Monday evening in January. If you are listening to the rebroadcast, because we are proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com at 1 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Some of our best shows in the past, I don't know how anybody's going to pick which one of those are, but there will be shows rebroadcast through the end of the year, so you can hear us at naturalnewsradio.com there. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week, Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, Mayer at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is December 15th, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. With me, my wonderful co-host, Dr. Mayer Eisenstein. Mayor, pleasure to be with you again, as always.
Alan, it's a pleasure to be with you, as always. And I'm not looking forward to the next few weeks of not being with you. Forward to maybe a little bit of time off, but I enjoy so much. You know, it's kind of like by the time the evening hour rolls around the Monday night, I'm kind of feel a little bit tired, and all of a sudden I hear your voice, and I'm energized like the Energizer Bunny.
Well, thanks, Mayor. It's certainly mutual. You know, we both have more than full days, as I think most people in today's world do. And yet, when we get to this hour, it's a breath of fresh air. So I'm glad to hear that that goes both ways. Well, Mayor, I've been watching your newsletters, among other things, during the week. There are 1,001 things we could talk about tonight, but let's pick out a handful of ones that we can get to in the hour that we have here. Is there anything that you'd like to pull up first?
Well, I'd love to talk about the study that was so well publicized in all the media. And here I have the quote from Fox News. Nearly half of Americans think flu shot can make you sick. And I looked at the comments, and we'll talk about the study in a little bit. It was just a survey of about 1,000 people, and kind of almost 50% of them said that they felt that the flu vaccine could give you the flu or can make you sick. But listen to the way most of the media reported. More than 40% of a sample of U.S. adults believe the myth that flu vaccines can give you the flu. And even correcting the misconception might not convince them to get the vaccine, a new survey suggests. Isn't that interesting? Just listening to the bias, the myth that flu vaccines can give you the flu. I thought myth has a different definition than something that's been very overrated, the flu vaccine. And it also reminds me of law school where the classical comment was, did you beat your wife this year? You know, a way of putting it, that, how do you answer that? You know, what if you never beat your wife? Do you believe the flu vaccine is effective this year? It's never been effective. You know, and no matter how much data they try to give them, the people they're interviewing are pretty sharp. I'm very impressed with the American public. And as we talked about the last couple of weeks, Professor Gruber, the one who called the American people stupid, American people are not stupid. And as I said over the last few weeks, as my father, may he rest in peace, always used to say, the American people are trusting, and they trust if an expert tells them something that it is most probably true. But the minute they find out that you're lying to them, that's it, the trust is gone. I think what's happened with the flu vaccine is the trust is gone. At the same time that they released this study about flu vaccine causing you to be sick, the CDC comes out and says that this year's flu vaccine isn't very effective. And then the next day they come out with a statement, CDC says not enough patients getting flu shot this year. What are these? You know, it's not effective. It may not work. The strain that is not effective is the only serious strain of the flu, the H2N2 strain or H3N2 strain, you know. And then they're upset that the patients aren't taking it. Well, let me tell you something. It doesn't take a lot of rocket science to realize that this vaccine does not work. And I want to address this, the issue of, does the flu vaccine give you the flu? I can't really address it completely because I don't know the answer. But I can tell you what answer I do know, and this we have to thank our dear friend Dr. King, where he pointed out a study. He said the only study that was, double-blind study, where they had people got the flu vaccine, people didn't get it, no one knows what they got, and then they tested teenagers or children that were over a year period, and they found that the risk of developing a non-influenza respiratory virus in the vaccinated group was 4 times that of the unvaccinated group. Isn't that interesting? You know, and so the idea of telling people that taking the flu shot doesn't give you the flu, we use the word flu so loosely as to mean any type of stomach or respiratory virus that it's very easy for someone to say, well, I think I took the flu vaccine and I got sick with some type of respiratory illness. You're trying to quibble with me if it's the flu or if it's a Coxsackie virus or some other type of virus. That's blatantly absurd.
Mayor, I want to go out on a not a real long limb here, but I want to read just as quickly as I can, as concisely as I can, a list of studies, which I'm sure is not by any means comprehensive, studies and other sources that raise questions about the effectiveness of flu vaccines. Now, this is a list that I include as part of a legal argument when I am defending my client's civil rights having to do with religious objections to flu shots in the workplace. But I thought it would be interesting just to see. There's about 10 or 12 of these, so I'm going to try to be quick with each one, but I just think collectively this is such a powerful message. So here's what I've got. In 2010, the International Consortium of Medical Researchers, known as the Cochrane Collaboration, reviewed the flu vaccine literature, which they've done several times for several segments of the population, for the effectiveness of flu vaccines on children, on seniors, on healthy adults, and so forth. This particular one looking at the effectiveness in healthy adults. They issued a warning, and the word warning was in all capital letters, and here's a quote, "Reliable evidence on influenza vaccines is thin, but there's evidence of widespread manipulation of conclusions." The review went on to find that vaccine use did not affect working days lost and had no effect on hospital admissions or complication rates. Back during the so-called swine flu pandemic in 2009 and 10, even the AMA and the CDC endorsed non-mandatory flu vaccine policies. So if they were going to do that during a pandemic, wouldn't that then also uphold outside of a pandemic? In 2011, OSHA, federal agency, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, stated that it believes there is insufficient scientific evidence for the federal government to promote mandatory influenza vaccination programs that do not have an option for the healthcare professional to decline for medical, religious, and or personal philosophical reasons. In November of 2012, there was a critical review in the International Journal of Family Medicine. Quote, "The arguments for uniform healthcare worker influenza vaccination are not supported by existing literature. The decision whether to get vaccinated should, except possibly in extreme situations, be that of the individual healthcare worker without legal, institutional, or peer coercion." In 2013, the British Medical Journal published an article saying that public health authorities' aggressive promotion of the influenza vaccine is not supported by the medical literature and fails to acknowledge serious vaccine risks, contrary to wildly mistaken claims. Only 16% of tested respiratory specimens are positive for influenza, and the serious vaccine adverse events are well documented internationally. In 2013, CIDRAP, the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, reported on studies showing that the influenza vaccine provided little or no protection in the 2010-11 flu season, and that getting a flu shot 2 years in a row may actually lower protection. In 2014, a systematic review of mandatory influenza vaccination in healthcare personnel in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine concluded that the evidence on clinical outcomes is lacking. Another 2014 study found that the trivalent influenza vaccine, quote, was not observed to ameliorate symptoms or viral shedding among vaccine failures. Vaccine failures meaning infections occurring among vaccinated persons. Did not ameliorate symptoms or viral shedding among vaccine failures compared with infected placebo recipients. In 2014, a Cochrane summary, Cochrane collaboration again, found that influenza vaccination shows no appreciable effect on working days lost or hospitalization. echoing again what they had said in 2010. It just goes on and on and on, Mayor. If there are studies claiming to show positive effects, they are certainly contradicted by or opposed by all of these and other sources. Now, these were studies that I pulled focused specifically on healthcare workers or adults because I was applying it in that arena to make a legal argument for healthcare workers. But it's typical of what we find in flu studies from what I have read and heard across the board. So at best, the mainstream medical view is conflicting with itself as opposed to supporting this bizarre, aggressive, never-ending push for flu vaccines on all adults, as we're seeing now, because it's been primarily healthcare workers. But there was an article just this past week talking about now how in College Station, Texas, teachers are being mandated to get the flu vaccine or wear a mask and gloves. Now, the gloves is a new one for me, Mayor. I hadn't even heard of that in the hospital setting where you might understand it. But teachers, and this, of course, you and I have talked about this. We predicted this. We couldn't have told anybody exactly when, but it's not like it's a dark hidden secret. The Department of Health and Human Services in their Healthy People 2020 initiative spells right out 90% of healthcare workers by 2020 with a flu shot and 80% of all the rest of us. That's the goal. And so they're going to have to be jumping on board en masse, I think, in the next 2 or 3 years with industries, companies, and professions across the country now. I think this will expand rapidly outside of the hospital arena over the next year or two.
And this is a kind of a setback. You know what bothers me so much, Alan? Doctors are really sharp people. That's been my observation being in medicine for over 41 years. And I just can't believe that they don't spend any time just looking at some of the data. You know, it's it boggles my mind that they are so that they just don't read. Doctors are the most well-read people around, you know, although maybe you can make an argument because of all the tests that they have to take and all the continuing education, which is not continuing education, it's continuing brainwashing. They just have they've lost their not will, but they've been broken, and they said, don't bother me with the facts. I don't want to hear any more facts because it may mean I have to rethink a position that's been so easy to promote. I get rewarded for saying it by all the media and everyone. In the last month, I can't tell you how excited I've been. 4 to 5 new babies every week we're seeing. And about half of them, if not more, are ones whose pediatrician, these are newborns, like 5-day-old, 1-month-old, 2-month-old, more than half have been thrown out of their pediatrician's office for refusing to vaccinate or wanting to talk about it. There's no talk anymore when it comes to this arena. And I think that they put themselves so in the corner and put themselves so behind, you know, that if all of a sudden more data keeps coming out, eventually they'll be broken and they'll say, why did I support this agenda of no talking? You know, just this is what you do. I mean, this is the greatest savior ever. You know, it's kind of like the CDC after they come out that the flu vaccine didn't work this year. Okay, didn't work. I mean, it doesn't protect against the only strain that's really damaging. Why do they have to then make the statement, but we still recommend giving the flu vaccine? It wasn't relevant in that. It wasn't relevant. That wasn't the it's like, it doesn't, this car is broken. It doesn't work, but buy it anyway.
Mayor, let me chime in just a moment on this kicking patients and their parents out of the practice, because we saw something a few years ago, I think, at this point, where they were starting, physicians, pediatricians in particular around the country, we were starting to employ a tool called a vaccine refusal form, where they would require non-vaccinating parents to sign the form. And the reason they would give them is something about liability protection, but this form went way beyond that. It basically, they were asking parents to sign a form saying they were being a terrible bad person for not vaccinating. And a question arose as that came to my attention as to whether or not that was even legal for them to do. And I believe at this point it violates constitutional rights, perhaps on two or three different grounds. And when they've gone a step further now, where they just flat out exclude people from their practice, again, I think it violates laws. Now, they can do this and get away with it because the odds that somebody wants their child to be seen by a particular pediatrician is so bad that they're willing to sue the pediatrician to force them to accept them probably pretty slim. So I think they're going to get away with it for the most part. And what we really need here, Mayor, in my opinion, is somebody who's willing to sue in order to make a statement, hopefully generate some legal precedent so that we have a formal point of reference in the law, because legal precedent comes from actual court cases. And unless you've got precedent addressing an issue or a statute or regulation, some other kind of law that's addressing a specific issue, then technically the law is unclear on that point. You know, we can all have our opinion about what we think is or isn't constitutional or lawful, but ultimately the courts have the job of making that decision. So I want to offer just a couple of brief legal arguments. If I get too long-winded, Mayor, reel me in here.
No, that's okay. I'm enjoying this.
But a couple, the starting place for me is sort of a broad constitutional right that we have to parent our children, and this comes from the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause, which has been interpreted as applying to many different issues, but one of the issues that the U.S. Supreme Court, in a series of court cases over about the last 100 years, has established solidly in our jurisprudence in this country is that we have a due process right to parent our children. In fact, a responsibility to parent our children. And what it means in terms of due process is that we are presumed to be making decisions that are in the best interests of our children unless there's a showing to the contrary. And that includes the right to the care, custody, and control of our children. That's the phrase we see in Supreme Court cases, and other court cases have adopted and copied that language, which includes the decision to make the right to make medical decisions for our children. And the only time that the state can intervene is in narrow exceptions such as an emergency. You know, a doctor has the right to stop the bleeding or save your child's life or prevent serious long-term damage before they track you down at work and ask you if it's okay to treat the child. You know, those kind of obvious situations. Somebody joins the military at 17, in some states at least, you're going to be considered an adult there and you can make decisions for yourself and so forth. So it's just all, you know, narrow exceptions. But as a general rule, we have the right to make those decisions. So the question then is, well, do you have constitutional rights with a private pediatrician? Because the starting place with the Constitution is that constitutional rights apply to governments. They don't apply to private entities. And this is one reason you hear a lot of private schools or private physicians say, well, we're private, we can do what we want. Well, not so fast. If a private entity accepts government funds in the medical world, such as Medicaid and Medicare, that may open a door for the application of constitutional rights directly with a private physician or private school or other private entities. So there's an issue that came up, Mayor. There was, interestingly, because it was one that if I ever did learn, I had forgotten it, but there was a group of parents, one of whom was a law student in one of the New England states, and I forget exactly which one, but there was language in the state religious exemption law that was like these refusal to vaccinate forms where you have to, you know, sign something saying you're being a terrible, awful person. Well, it turns out that free speech is not only the right to have you and voice your opinion, but the right to be free from being compelled to speak. So when someone is requiring you to sign a form agreeing to things that you don't agree with, that's potentially a violation of your First Amendment free speech rights. Now, if you have a lawful exemption, and let's say it's a religious exemption, then you have First Amendment free exercise rights. Can they just tell you that they're not going to treat you because you're not vaccinating your child? Might be violating your First Amendment free exercise rights. So there are just all these different areas, constitutional areas, that come under question when we see physicians using these refusal to vaccinate forms or just flat out refusing to treat anybody. They have some ability, if they're in private practice, to make decisions about who they're going to take as a patient, who they're not going to take. But they can't unlawfully refuse to take a parent. So I'm not sure what the best way to approach this is, because I've not yet found anybody who wants to sue a doctorate unless somebody really had the money and was really understood that the reason to do this in this instance is in order to see if we can open a door for other people to keep their doctors, for doctors to stop behaving in this completely unscientific and unlawful manner just because they can and can get away with it. It's really just grade school bullying there.
Oh, it's, without a doubt, it's bullying. You know, and I can tell you that one thing, I love what you're saying, because this goes to an issue of constitutionality, you know, and civil rights. But I go one step further. Maybe this is a place where we can educate. And the educate is that pediatricians today are not qualified to take care of children. And I think that that's the... And so the question is, where do you go? And I've spoken about this many times. Where do you go as a parent who's got a child who you want to be seen by a doctor? Well, you got a couple of options, and I give you the best option. Find a chiropractor who practices pediatrics. I have been, as you know, very enamored with the chiropractic profession. For the most part, and you can't speak for every single person or every single chiropractor, I have found them to be incredibly scientific, incredibly open if they're not sure what they're doing, or like anyone should be. That's, you know, and extremely valuable as a healthcare professional to help you with virtually all of your pediatric needs. And this is really important because, you know, it may be more important to find someone who is going to not only respect your views, but believe in your views. And I think that's where you find the chiropractic profession.
May, I heard a wonderful story from a pediatric chiropractor at the, I believe it was the NVIC's a conference with them back in around 1999 or so, late 90s. And this guy got up, and I had never heard of a pediatric chiropractor before that point. I thought it was wonderful. And the long story short is this: the child had serious problems right after birth, and they put the child on all kinds of drugs and did everything they knew to do, and they sent the child home to die. They said, there's nothing more we can do. Take the child home, make him as comfortable as you can, and, you know, he's gone. And so they had nothing to lose, and I don't know how they heard about the pediatric chiropractor, but they got a hold of him, and he very, you know, carefully feels up and down the spine, found a vertebra in the neck that was particularly and seriously misaligned, and got it back into alignment, and of course immediately told them to take the child off all the drugs and so forth, and the child recovered and did fine, you know, after recovering. And I was just so taken aback, just because, not because I didn't have anything against chiropractors, I just wasn't familiar with that as a subspecialty, and was just so impressed. We have so many options, and I want all of them on the table, including allopathic care. I want whatever works in any given situation, you know. But the one thing that is refreshingly absent, and I know, Mayor, that you will both appreciate this and understand and not take offense as a medical doctor yourself, because, of course, all the things, criticisms I make about medical doctors never apply to you, which is why one of the reasons I love being with you. But the arrogance is conspicuously absent with chiropractors. And I've been to a number of chiropractors over my life, and I've been to good ones and bad ones, but the good ones have been just incredibly wonderful and gifted human beings. And there's just, you know, there's that whole layer that's not there. It's like I find that I can talk to them person to person, human being to human being, and I always feel like there's this wall, not always, but usually this wall between me and medical doctors, you know, that you got to stretch your neck to look up to them. And I certainly can respect their academic intelligence, their training, and so forth. But when somebody can just be a human being with me, and some doctors do this very well, certainly not all doctors, but others do have difficulty with this. And I don't see that wall there as much with some of the more alternative professionals that I've been to.
I totally agree. You know, I totally agree. You know, and I like your statement, Alan. We have to look at all modalities as such, you know. But this is one that I think has been enormously underused, underappreciated, you know. Before we go to break, I want to give a little teaser. We've got another enemy on the horizon, someone who is unqualified for his position, and he's just been appointed to be the next Surgeon General of this country. And I want to just give a loud shout-out to this unqualified person, and we'll talk about him after we come back.
Well, you certainly have piqued my curiosity. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. We'll be right back with you, folks. Don't go away.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called UltraRush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. UltraRush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in UltraRush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with UltraRush, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
Back with the Know Your Rights Hour, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. Okay, Mayor, on that tantalizing teaser, next Surgeon General.
Dr. Vivek Murthy, a foreign-born American, 37 years old, who is appointed and confirmed by the Senate in this lame duck session to be the next Surgeon General. And I looked at, and you know, he reminds me of the president. He's brilliant. He's Harvard trained. None of that makes any difference to me. You know, I'm going to give you one statement that he made. No, that's not it. I got it here. Obamacare sets us on the path to better health, better health care, and lower cost. Let me tell you something. Just making those statements, he made that, you know, shows me that he has no idea of business because, first of all, it's not lower cost, as we all know, and Professor Gruber set us straight to that. So he must be among the stupid people in this country, according to Professor Gruber. But I don't care about his positions on guns, which he said guns kill people. The last time I looked at it, no gun ever killed a person by itself. But here's his position on vaccines. Americans have to understand the science is clear. Vaccines are among the most powerful public health tool in the history of human medicine. Without them, we expose others and ourselves to terrible, needless suffering. The Surgeon General should release a report defending the facts and get the message out. That was one statement. And then the next one, vaccine rates are falling. This is his statement. And the infectious diseases we never imagined would plague America are returning. Alan, we've done a good job. Vaccine rates are falling. You know, so it seems that the most brilliant people from the CDC, the FDA, the AMA, American Academy of Pediatrics can't stand up to a couple of parents who say vaccines are dangerous, you know, and have to use derogatory type words. And he's going to make it his mission to eradicate ignorance about preventable infectious diseases. Mr. Murthy, shame on you. You know, you claim to be a scientist. You're surely not a scientist. You're surely not worthy to be the attorney general, because an attorney general should be an inclusive person to open up and to listen to arguments, not to be a political hack.
Well put, Mayor. But yeah, but as we know, you know, in today's world, people are appointed for political reasons and not for scientific, medical, or legal integrity. And this is the task we're faced with. But it is fascinating that they have to keep resorting to, even though they control the mainstream media, even though they control the vast majority of the authoritative positions, CDC, FDA, et cetera, that they still have to resort to this kind of personal attacks we see, particularly in some of the articles online, and I'm sure offline as well. They don't offer their opposing view. They viciously attack and demean anybody who doesn't agree with them. And the fact that they have to resort to that tactic screams volumes about how ineffective their control is. And
exactly.
So it's fascinating.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead, please.
No, jump in at any time. I was just saying it's fascinating that despite the, you know, media disadvantage that we have, that we are nevertheless continuing to make ground, and that speaks volumes about the merits of our concerns.
And I tell you what's so interesting, and I got a great tweet here from someone who follows me, and it says, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein and Professor Gruber would call the American public too stupid to voluntarily take a flu shot, so force them. I thought that was cute. But it's interesting because we go back to the study. This study is very, in my mind, is very important, the one that was reported on nearly half of Americans think flu shots can make you sick. What's important about it is they try to give them, they try to, in the group that read CDC information on the safety of vaccine, fewer people believed it could give you the flu, but it didn't change the overall statistics.
Well, Mayor, I can tell you, having talked with hundreds of healthcare workers all over the country, that one of the most common things I hear from these people is their firsthand experience where they say, I never get the flu shot, I never get sick. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And every once in a while they say, I rarely get sick. But it's usually either I never get sick or occasionally I rarely get sick. It's always my peers who get the flu shot who are taking time off every winter to get sick. Now, you and I both know that anecdotal evidence, a correlation is not proof of causation, but it certainly backs up and supports the studies that you keep pointing out that Dr. King, for example, has referred to. And I just talked about information from Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy and University of Minnesota that said that their data showed that getting a flu shot 2 years in a row can lower protection. So it's not like an isolated opinion here or there. It is the experience of healthcare workers nationally consistent with research that would predict that same experience or the same results. So even if there's other information out there, other studies that claim that the flu vaccines are, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread, at best, we have conflicting information. And the biggest piece, Mayor, that really just keeps coming back to me over and over and over again, so I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record to bring this up over and over again, but it is such a huge piece that seems to get so little mention, even in the alternative circles, is that even the FDA and the CDC have acknowledged in recent years, and many other people outside of those agencies as well, that 90 to 99% of the serious vaccine adverse events, the permanent severe disabilities and death, never get reported. And I've talked with some of the guys who, attorneys who handle these vaccine injury and death cases, and they say they get calls all the time from people who have missed the statute of limitations because they just didn't even know the program existed until years after they, you know, experienced this. So all of this goes to the reality that we have no data to tell us how safe or unsafe vaccines are. We don't have any data. It is vastly underreported, the serious adverse events. So there's just no way to know technically or precisely whether there's any net gain or potentially a serious net loss from vaccines. And I say that really giving tremendous benefit of the doubt to the vaccine industry and the pro-vaccine folks, because when you look a little closer, it's really no accident that that data is not available, which strongly suggests that there's something very serious to hide. But even if we just take it in a purely objective way, we don't have the data, so we really don't know one way or the other. That fact alone is enough reason for anybody to ethically and morally to have the right or should have the right to say no thank you in any situation, not have to justify it on medical, religious grounds or at all, but just to say no, I make an informed choice. I choose not to get the vaccine. I've got an article that's going to be coming out in Natural News real soon. Could be any day now because I've already submitted it, and I'll talk about it more when we come back in January. But I think it's really important, Mayor, for us to stress to people that as critical as being informed is, it's an absolutely necessary first step. It's only the first step of two or more steps that need to be taken if we're going to do anything other than watch in horror as this pro-vaccine agenda continues to play and go down the road, and particularly right now one of the really big parts of this is the influenza program sweeping healthcare workers around the country and poised now to spread to other professions and other industries, that we've got to become legislatively active. And there are some convenient ways to do that. You don't have to become a legislative activist in the sense of quit your day job and become a lobbyist, which is something you more or less had to do in years past if you really wanted to have a chance of making a difference in the legislative arena.
It's happening. I tell you why. Because every day that I see a new patient in the office who've left their doctor's office or thrown out of their doctor's office because they refuse to vaccinate, that's one more person standing up for this. And you wouldn't be seeing so much pushback from articles, you know, the CDC wouldn't have to say fewer people are getting the flu vaccine than should be getting it if they were winning the battle. They wouldn't say anything. You know, the best thing to
well,
do
the battle,
is not say
the
anything.
Battle they're winning, while the argument goes on one level, the battle they're winning is that laws are being passed requiring vaccines. Policies are being
That's
passed.
That's right. You're totally right.
Requiring vaccines. And on that level, we're not winning. And this is a point that I think we really need to drive home, because it doesn't matter how many people think that vaccines are a problem and choose or would choose not to get them if there's a law that says you have to get it anyway. So we need to be paying attention to what's going on in the legislative arena. There are dozens of bills in majority of states around the country have one or more vaccine bills pending as we speak. And most of those bills, if they get passed, are furthering the vaccine agenda, requiring more people to get vaccines, children and adults, more vaccines for both of those categories, more people to administer vaccines, pharmacists administering vaccines, more tracking programs. There's even been legislation proposed in one or more states to track adult vaccination status. And in some cases, bills that if passed would let children consent to vaccines directly, and limiting our right to refuse, making it harder for people to opt out legally. So we've got to be paying attention, be vigilant on the legislative level, and that's something I'm going to be hammering away at in the coming year, in the new year, here in this arena. But there's an article I just want to call people's attention to. It'll be coming out in Natural News, hopefully in the next day or two, that is about how to eliminate influenza vaccine mandates for employees. And I'll give you the tip-off is that it's about being legislatively active. But what I've done is to compile concise, fully referenced information from both the medical literature and legal sites to give people a tool that they can use to communicate with their legislators, in addition to whatever else they want to use or any part of what I have. There's no one way to do this, but I've provided a tool that I think will be a very useful one for people to use to communicate with legislators to get laws passed, because there are actually at least two states that have either a state statute or a health department regulation that prohibit hospitals from mandating flu shots. And we need to have that kind of law enacted all over the country, and then not just with flu shots, of course, but other vaccines as well. But that would be a really good starting place, because that's where the vaccine movement is putting their primary thrust right now, is in the influenza vaccines. And, you know, the medical literature and legal rights be damned, if you'll pardon my phrasing there, because they're barreling forward with this. And when I see an article that says teachers are being told to get a flu shot or wear a mask and gloves, like there have been, you know, horrible flu outbreaks and you know, massive deaths because of lack of teachers wearing gloves in the past. You know, I mean, this is just so preposterous. But there's two things that people need to do. They need to become aware of what their rights are right now so they can get out of this mess and on the individual level. But then we need to be acting legislatively to stop this train in its tracks, because it's barreling down the tracks at full speed right now.
I let me tell you are so right. I can't even. I totally agree with you. It's like we're winning these skirmishes and maybe losing the war, you know, and that's very, very scary. You know, Alan, we've got our dear friend Dr. King, who we've been referencing over and over again tonight, and I hope that he can kind of pull this all together about the survey and everything about the influenza vaccine. Dr. King, is that you here with us?
Yes, I'm with you. I was sorry I was delayed. I was going to try to be with you earlier because last week you mentioned something about wanting to know about cancer vaccines or vaccines grown on cancer substrates. But to put the flu program in its proper perspective, there is no flu program. It is an influenza vaccination program. It does cause the flu, which is any influenza-like illness, because it causes all the ones that aren't influenza, and that's been shown in a study that's called the Gold Standard Study, which is double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled, so you can't, and with nobody knowing who got what until it's all over. So until anybody does, I haven't seen the industry doing one of those studies to refute it, so I would assume they can't. They haven't seen them even trying because they don't think it can be refuted. I think you'd get similar results. You won't get exactly the same because, you know, Mother Nature doesn't do everything the same twice. But you get similar results if you did the study over again and again and again, I would guess, as long as you did it honestly, as long as it was truly double-blind and there was a true placebo involved.
And I tell you, Dr. King, since you told me about that and you sent me the article, I've used that over and over again, and I've tried to educate my patients that there is no such thing as a flu vaccine. It's an influenza vaccine against, at best, four strains, of which most probably doesn't work in the wrong strains.
Well, that's this year especially, they admitting that it is not exactly the right strains. It's the very wrong strains. And again, last week before, I guess, you know, we speculated a little bit of why were they doing this. Well, that's because is always the answer to why. It's distracting from the whatever. If you admit that something's not good, then you've taken away one of the attack points from the people in the opposition. They can't attack you because you've already admitted it. So why are we discussing that? It's old news. Standard tactics, standard vaccine apologist tactics, if you ask me. I can't blame them. Great strategy, you know. Sorry, it's not as good.
A great short-term strategy. That's my feeling.
Yeah, that's all they're looking for. You have to understand, they run on the vaccine companies want to get their bottom line this year. They got to make their number. They'll worry about next year when it gets to be next year.
And let's face it, the public can be pretty quick to forget sometimes. We get, you know, something is big news for a few days, and then it goes by the wayside. And so maybe they only need a short-term strategy unless we are effective at keeping the issues in front of people's faces.
Well, unless people realize that they're trying to keep the issue changing to which football player did this or what woman's doing what and what star's doing what. Not to take people away from focusing on what the real issues are that are important for their lives, their children's lives, or whatever. Have a focus on things which change and don't really mean anything in the final analysis. That keeps you tied up about whatever. And, of course, throw in false flag operations and rumors of this, that, and the other, and terrorists and all this kind of stuff. And it just keeps people stirred up so they can't concentrate or focus or think. I think Mr. Rappaport would say that in the matrix, they're trapped in the matrix. Maybe we all are trapped in the matrix. This is the matrix we're trapped in. To try to keep us from focusing on what we need to do and what's really important, as I told one person today, look, you got a job, but you got a life. Which is more important to you in the long run, that you're alive or that you have that job? You know, if you're being alive is more important, then do what it takes to be alive. If it's not, well, then, you know, do what it takes to keep that job. You know, but
boy, thank you,
choice.
Dr. King. I'm gonna borrow that one because I did. You know, this is a really big struggle that healthcare workers now, in particular, and I hear this all the time as I'm talking to them all over the country. And it's, you know, I can't afford to lose my job. I don't want this vaccine, but I can't afford to lose my job. And I really appreciate that everybody has to make that judgment call for themselves, but I can't help but wonder how many people who say that are people who really could handle losing their job. They just don't want to go through the change that it would mean.
Can they afford to lose their life?
Right.
Yeah, and that's sometimes what I'll say. Well, can you afford, you know, a vaccine injury or, God forbid, a death any better? But, of course, they're playing the odds. If they give in to the vaccine, even if they give in to the vaccine knowing that there's that risk, then they're playing the odds. They feel like they don't have a choice.
Of course.
You know, I can't judge anybody else's decision, but boy, the impression I get from the people I talk to is that there are so many people, so many more people who are willing to give in than those who are able, for whatever combination of reasons, you know, to dig in their heels and take a stand. And we need people, we need more people to take a stand. And maybe the way to do that, again, though, more successfully in terms of the practical reality, who's going to really do what, is in the legislative arena. Maybe there are people who are willing to talk to the legislatures who aren't willing to stand up to their employer. Hope so.
Well, again, for our sakes, I hope so, too, because otherwise it don't look very good out there in the long run, because, as you said, they're passing these laws to do whatever they want and make you do it. And the issue about freedom of choice or informed consent, there's no way to be giving informed consent when you're not informed. I don't know of any way. If you know of a way to give informed consent when you're not informed, tell me about it. I'd really like to hear it.
Well, we don't even have many cases that don't even have the option to make such a choice anyway. I mean, it's a moot point for so many people. But as Mayor keeps pointing out, and I don't want to lose sight of the bright side of this either, clearly awareness is growing. Clearly more and more people are figuring out what's going on. And at some point, when we have more and more people, and here we have, you know, this new upcoming Surgeon General making these kind of blanket, clearly political pro-pharmaceutical statements about vaccines and Obamacare. How long can this hold up before people just start laughing and turning off the TV and ignoring them? I mean,
well, hopefully not
like
long
Mayor
for our sakes, and hopefully for the people's sake, not long. But again, having lived quite some time, long enough is what the pharmaceutical companies hope. Just long enough.
You know, one of my favorite bumper stickers from years ago was one that said, "What if there was a war and nobody came?" And I love the concept, because the only reason our leaders have power is because we give it to them. And not that I expect that to change overnight or anytime soon, but wouldn't it be interesting if we just hit the critical mass, the 100th monkey, where suddenly over a very short period of time, everybody, a majority of people in the country, realize that it was all just a big hoax, and everybody says, "We hereby, from this point forward, no longer acknowledge the authority of the Surgeon General or the President or whomever or whatever it would take to be able to just sort of leave those people speaking only to themselves while we go off somewhere else and put together a sane society." You know, what a concept. What a vision.
From your mouth to God's ears, that would be nice, but I don't, like I said, I'm a simple person. I've lived long enough to know that not likely to happen, because there's a huge propaganda machine trying to distract the public every
Dr.
day.
King, I respectfully disagree with you, because 41 years ago when I started in practice, I never thought that the vaccine refusal would reach such a high level. I never thought so. You know, and now it's become commonplace. You know, you never saw articles about vaccine refusal. It didn't exist. You know, and it was kind of a small part of the agenda. Now, I don't believe it's because the vaccine questioners of vaccines are so more vocal, although maybe they are. But I think we're seeing something that's phenomenal. You know, it's something that's I believe it's happening, and I think that Alan, what you said earlier, we have to really, really dig in legislatively, not to let them pass laws that are going to violate all our rights or do something. Or who
well,
knows what,
and but, not only that, for the ones that have already been passed, find somebody in our group to take them to task that they're not constitutional. Because this, you keep pointing out, Alan, that these laws definitely don't appear to be constitutional. But in order for you to get them undone, you have to have a case. And to have a case, you have to have standing. And to have standing, you have to have proof that he might be injured. Of course, if you were a nurse,
yep.
I guess you could point to the fact that all these nurses that have taken flu shots and become something called Guillain-Barré, which last time I looked, that's an injury. And can be a terminal one. So,
I'm not opposed to seeing some of these issues addressed in court, but this is again another reason why I'm so big on the legislative approach, because I think in many instances we're going to have a better chance legislatively than judicially, if for no other reason, just because of what you said, standing and someone to hire the attorney and so forth. But we're actually out of time. I hate to cut you off, Dr. King. Please come back with us the first show in January and pick up where we've left off,
I'm
or bring anything else.
Kicking.
Well, we certainly hope you will be, because your contributions are enormous, and we love you and want you back. Mayor, I'm going to go ahead and take us out here just because we've hit the deadline here. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and Dr. Paul King, who we hope will join us again in January. We are here Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com, beginning again in January, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency.